Picture this. You're a clinical immunologist, and your first patient of the day is a 9-month-old boy whose mother appears distressed. He was referred to you by his pediatrician due to a history of recurrent bacterial sinusitis and ear infections, and apparent lack of palatine tonsils. After running some tests, your geneticist colleague called you to let you know that he's identified a mutation on the Bruton's tyrosine kinase gene, validating your leading diagnosis of X-linked A-gamma globulinemia, a disease marked by the absence of mature B cells. After explaining the treatment regimen, which consists mainly of antibody injections every 3 to 4 weeks, the patient's mother asks if the treatment works similarly as vaccination. She also asks if this will impact her son's ability to receive vaccination in the future. How do you respond to the mother's questions? Hi and welcome to Audio Breaks. I'm Alex Dennis, and this is the break on the foundations and frameworks of immunology. Let's get to it. After completing this section, you'll be able to 1. Discuss the main purposes of the immune system. 2. Briefly explain how the innate immune system works and describe how antigens are transferred from the innate to the adaptive immune system, featuring the dendritic cells. 3. Briefly describe the main purpose of the adaptive immune system and explain how the two arms, cellular and humoral, work. And 4. Describe what happens after an immune response is finished. How do we survive in a complex environment filled with harmful organisms that thrive on colonizing us? Our heroic defender is the immune system, a network of organs and cell lines that exist with the mission of protecting the body from harm. While we often recognize the pathogen-fighting capabilities of the system, we can sometimes forget that the immune system is also crucial in ensuring the body escapes safe from itself, as in when our cells transform into cancer cells. As someone who did their bachelor's in immunology, I can tell you the immune system is super underrated. On the dark side, though, sometimes our immune system can get overactive, reacting against our own normal body tissue. Taken together, the immune system is both critical for survival and a vital topic for new medical research. Part 1. Immune system functions. In general, the purposes of the immune system can be broken down into 3 categories. 1. To defend against pathogens, for example, bacteria, viruses, and parasites. 2. To defend against malfunctioning cells, an example here would be neoplasms. And 3. To help clean up old tissue to facilitate growth. Malfunctions of the immune system can thus lead to devastating problems, so the immune system must be tightly regulated to ensure good control. Think no further than autoimmune diseases, such as multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, or Guillain-Barré syndrome, which occur when the normal immune response is dysregulated and begins to attack normal cells in the body. Part 2. Immune system organization. The immune system can be separated into 2 branches. The innate immune system, which is characterized by rapid response and general defense, and the adaptive immune system, which is characterized by slower but more targeted responses. The innate immune system is the older, more archaic branch of the immune system. It is fast, non-specific, and inherited. But by that virtue, it does not change during an organism's lifetime. It includes physical components that act as barriers, such as your skin and epithelial layers, as well as molecular and cellular components, such as mast cells, phagocytes, complement proteins, natural killer or NK cells, eosinophils, basophils, and dendritic cells. On the other hand, the adaptive immune system is new on an evolutionary timescale. It includes B and T lymphocytes, their products, which includes primarily antibodies and cytokines, and the lymphatic system. It is significantly slower in its response than the innate immune system, taking a few days to kick in. What it lacks in speed, though, it more than makes up for in strength and specificity of response, and its ability to hold a grudge. Alright, let's try a question. What is the more archaic branch of our immune system? That would be the innate branch of the immune system. Before delving into these branches, we need to establish some terminology, specifically that of their players, the immune cells, also called white blood cells or leukocytes. There are two main categories of white blood cells, depending on the differentiation pathway from stem cells: cells of the lymphoid lineage and cells of the myeloid lineage. Long story short, all cells of the myeloid lineage are part of innate immunity, and all but one of the lymphoid lineage are part of adaptive immunity. So the B and T cells are part of adaptive immunity, while NK cells are part of innate immunity. This is a good time to reiterate the difference between leukocyte and lymphocyte. Lymphocytes are the three immune cells of the lymphoid lineage: the B cells, the T cells, and the NK cells. On the other hand, leukocyte refers to any immune cell. Another term you'll hear tossed around are the granulocytes, also called polymorphonuclear leukocytes, abbreviated PMN, PML, or PMNL. Granulocytes, which include neutrophils, basophils, and eosinophils, refer to the fact that these cells have densely staining granules in their cytoplasm, and the PML is because these cells also happen to have oddly shaped nuclei. Plot twist, that term is mostly used to refer to neutrophils specifically. All granulocytes derive from the common myeloid progenitor, but not all myeloid immune cells are granulocytes. All squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares. For instance, monocytes, which we'll talk about in just a bit, are agranulocytes of the myeloid lineage. Okay, let's see what you got from this. What immune cells are agranulocytes? Okay, so I mentioned that all granulocytes are from the myeloid lineage, and the only myeloid cells that are agranulocytes are monocytes. So that leaves us with the monocytes and lymphocytes as the agranulocytes. So that's it for terminology. We're ready to delve into the process of immunity. Remember that the two branches play crucial roles individually. In addition, communication between the two branches allows for coordinated, stronger immune responses. We'll look at each in turn. Alright, hopefully this one should be a gimme. What are the two arms of the immune system? Those would be the innate and adaptive branches of the immune system. Part 3. Innate immune system. Now that we know the general role of the innate immune system, let's tackle it by following a mean bug along its journey to wreak havoc. The barriers created by the innate immune system, primarily the epithelial barriers like skin and the linings of your gastrointestinal and respiratory tracts, are usually the first line of defense that any pathogen wanting to infect the body must pass. While these act partially as physical barriers, they also act as holding areas for many sentinel cells that wait for pathogens to get through, including mast cells and dendritic cells. If pathogens manage to get past the first line of defense, then the second line of defense, composed of cellular components and the complement system, gets triggered. Let's talk about who are the first to the party if pathogens cross the barrier: the neutrophils. Neutrophils are the epitome of innate immunity as they are first to the scene. They non-specifically recognize and destroy microbes by phagocytosis. Their numbers peak within 24 hours, and then they die. As a matter of fact, pus mainly consists of dead neutrophils. So we throw these cells at the bug, hoping we won't need to solicit the more targeted, adaptive branch of the immune system. Part of who decides whether the neutrophils are handling the job well are the macrophages. Let's get something clear from the get-go about these cells. Monocytes in the blood are macrophages in the tissue. What do I mean by that? Well, monocytes are phagocytes that always circulate in the blood. Once they get signaled to move out of the blood into the tissues via inflammatory markers, they do so, and there they become macrophages. These phagocytize bacteria, cellular debris, and senescent red blood cells, as well as decide whether the inflammation needs to be calmed or ramped up. Quick pause here. Which are the first immune cells to be recruited once a pathogen crosses the first line of defense? Those would be the neutrophils. And which cells come in a bit later to sort of manage the acute inflammation? Those would be the monocytes, which exit the blood and move into the tissues to become macrophages. Before we move on to ramping up the immune system, we need to talk more about immune cells that are still part of innate immunity, but have more targeted functions. For instance, basophils mediate allergic reactions. They're pretty similar to mast cells, except those are in the connective tissue instead of in the bloodstream like basophils. Mast cells are activated by tissue trauma, complement proteins, and IgE cross-linking, and in response acutely release histamine, so that works with the whole allergy story of basophils. And then we have eosinophils and natural killer cells. Eosinophils, think parasites, and natural killer cells, think destroy hijacked host cells, whether that be virally infected cells or cancer cells. What cells are the bloodstream counterpart of mast cells? Mast cells live in tissue and basophils in the bloodstream. Though they have several characteristics that distinguish them, they're more similar than different. In fact, mast cells were once thought to be tissue-resident basophils, so you should always think of them together. Now, I saved the best for last, or at least my favorite one for last, the dendritic cells. These are important because, after all is said and done and the neutrophils and macrophages have been at it for a while, the dendritic cells come in and they basically decide whether the adaptive immune system needs to be recruited. If they deem so, then they pick up antigen from the offending agent, process it with exquisite machinery in order to be able to present it to the adaptive immune cells, namely T cells, in a way that will activate them and recruit them. We're very close to looking at the adaptive branch, but there's one last bit that's important here. Antibodies and phagocytes are complemented or linked by complement proteins, a key portion of the innate immune system produced primarily by the liver. Although complex in function, complement proteins basically act by attacking pathogens, signaling immune cells, and neutralizing pathogens and their toxins. Let's do a quick throwback question. What is the first layer of defense for the innate immune system? Physical barriers, such as the skin and epithelial layers, are the first layer of defense. Part 4. Adaptive immune system. Recall that the adaptive immune system is a highly specialized system. We aren't born with a fully functioning adaptive immune system. It requires exposure to many antigens over time to produce full variation. The system has several general features. We'll go over them together. But I just want to emphasize that they are easily inferable when you think about the function of adaptive immunity: to mediate a targeted, strong, and lasting attack against offending pathogen. Consistent with that, in the adaptive immune system, each antibody produced is specific to an antigen, and the system can cater its response to different types of pathogens. This is called specificity and specialization. The adaptive immune system can respond to an extremely diverse number of antigens with limited starting genetic material. This is called diversity. Although the first response may take longer, the adaptive immune system can remember an antigen and ramp a faster response on reinfection. This property of memory is the basis of vaccination and, as with every property we'll discuss here, does not exist in innate immunity. Once a target is identified, adaptive immune system cells producing antibodies against an antigen begin ramping up production until the target is neutralized. Because all the antibodies produced are exactly the same, this is referred to as clonal expansion. Following target neutralization, response is ramped down and excess immune cells killed, returning to a homeostatic level. This feature of the adaptive immune system is referred to as contraction and homeostasis. And lastly, through multiple selective processes, adaptive immune system cells that react to host are destroyed before maturation. This is called non-reactivity to self. Together, these features allow the adaptive immune system to perform specific targeted responses to a huge load of antigens and prevent reinfection in the future, without requiring a constant massive immune response. Let's try a question. The adaptive branch of the immune system is capable to respond in a targeted fashion to novel pathogens. What property does this represent? This represents the specificity of the adaptive branch. Digging a bit deeper now, the adaptive immune system can further be divided into two branches, humoral and cellular, which work together to accomplish specific functions. Conveniently, there are two lymphocytes that are part of adaptive immunity, B cells and T cells. B cells initiate humoral immunity. T cells go with cell-mediated immunity. A hallmark of humoral immunity is the production of antigen-specific antibodies. In contrast, in cell-mediated immunity, T cells themselves are the effectors, for example, through signaling cellular apoptosis. All right, let's zoom in a bit on the humoral branch. B cells are presented an antigen via their B cell receptor, after which they put a tremendous effort into designing the perfect, very precise recipe to make the perfect antibody against that antigen, and that antigen only. Once it's figured out how to do that, which I really can't emphasize enough is no piece of cake, it goes into mass production. It does that by differentiating into a plasma cell, whose only job now is to produce a bunch of these perfect antibodies. The other route of a B cell is to become a memory B cell, because we don't want to re-put all that same effort over again to reinvent that recipe if we come across the same bug in the future. No need to reinvent the wheel. So, the antibodies secreted by plasma cells achieve their function through four main mechanisms. First, they directly inactivate pathogens by coating them and preventing them from interacting with host. They also label pathogens for destruction and phagocytosis. They can aggregate to form an insoluble antibody-antigen complex, which is called agglutination. And finally, they activate the complement system we briefly mentioned earlier. Quick check-in on that. What is the descendant of the B cells that focuses itself with mass antibody production called? That would be the plasma cell. All right, so from these functions, it should make sense that typically, the humoral branch is better at targeting extracellular microbes. That leaves intracellular microbes and malignant cells, both a type of hijacked host cell, to the cell-mediated response, which in order to face the increased complexity, has a few more players to work with, QT cells. Now, T cells can be broadly broken up into two major groups, helper T cells and cytotoxic T cells. The CD8-positive killer cells directly kill virus-infected and malignant cells, mainly by inducing their apoptosis. They sort of roam around like police, stopping suspicious-looking cells like, "Show me your hands!" On the other hand, helper CD4 T cells, like their name implies, help other immune cells perform their function. How does that work, you ask? Well, naive T helper cells, which are cells that have not seen antigen, are activated by an antigen-presenting cell, abbreviated APC. Once activated, they become effector T cells and will signal other immune cells to activate, and that includes cytotoxic T cells as well as B cells. Again, some activated helper T cells, as well as cytotoxic T cells, will become memory T cells, which can be reactivated in case of reinfection. Regulatory T cells don't fall into either of these two categories. That's because they constitute a small subset of special CD4 positive T cells that have the crucial function of modulating the activity of other T cells, ensuring that their activation does not go out of control. All right, quick break here for an important recap question. What are the two most important groups of T lymphocytes? Those would be the CD4 helper T cells and the CD8 cytotoxic T cells. Recall Tregs don't fall in either of these categories, but are crucially important to prevent the immune system from spiraling out of control. Clearly, there's a lot going on in the adaptive immune system, so it needs to be sharply coordinated. One of the ways that's achieved is through cytokines, which are molecules secreted by immune cells and have effects on other cells. Cytokines like interleukin-1 and tumor necrosis factor control what appropriate type of immune response takes place. While many are pro-inflammatory, some actually downregulate inflammation. Let's stop here for a review question. Which cell types are included in the cell-mediated adaptive immune response? Those would be helper T cells, cytotoxic T cells, regulatory T cells, and memory T cells. Part 5. After the immune response. After an immune response, a complex network of anti-inflammatory mediators and immune cells modulate healing. In acute infections, neutrophils will die within hours, though macrophages will survive in tissue much longer. These dying leukocytes will accumulate alongside dead tissue and pathogens, eventually forming pus. As a localized infection continues and becomes more chronic, the area can be walled off by the surrounding healthy cells, creating a physical barrier of fibrosis to the pathogen and inflammation. This is the idea behind abscess formation. In disseminated or systemic infections, no localized barrier can be formed, and the immune system must fight a more widespread battle. Eventually, if an immune response resolves, pro-inflammatory cell signaling will decrease. As cytokine production does finally drop, chemotaxis of immune cells will slow, and the innate immune system will allow for inflammation to decrease and tissue healing to begin. Once in the tissue and signaled with markers of infection resolution, macrophages play a role in proper tissue healing. They do so by phagocytizing dead pathogens and tissues, signaling local cells to initiate repair, and signaling special wound healing cells to enter the damaged tissue. The adaptive immune system functions similarly as an infection resolves. Once activating signals from B cells decrease, a process of contraction takes place. The vast majority of plasma cells will die off through apoptosis. Some plasma cells migrate to the bone marrow, where they receive signals to keep them alive for a long period. Other plasma cells migrate to lymph nodes, the spleen, or the mucosal system. As macrophage signaling decreases, pro-inflammatory T helper cells will apoptose and anti-inflammatory T helper cells will take over. Without pro-inflammatory signals, cytotoxic T cells will also downregulate their activity. Combined with increased anti-inflammatory cytokines, tissue healing can now begin. Alright, that's all I've got for the immune system. Let's see what we're taking away from this episode. What are the three functions of the immune system? The immune system defends us against pathogens, defends us against ourselves, in the case of cells gone rogue like in cancer. It also helps us clean up old tissue to facilitate growth. What are the two branches of the immune system? The immune system has an innate branch and an adaptive branch. Further, what are some of the components of the innate branch? The innate immune system includes tissue barriers, the complement system, phagocytes, mast cells, NK cells, eosinophils, basophils, and dendritic cells. The innate immune system is fast, heritable, and nonspecific. What cell is crucial in mediating the link from the innate to the adaptive branch? Dendritic cells act as the primary bridge between the innate and adaptive immune system. They collect antigen from the offending microbe, intricately process it, and present it to the T cells, thereby activating them. Now, what are some properties of the adaptive branch that distinguish it from the innate branch? The adaptive immune system is slow, but is specific, specialized, and diverse, and has memory function. The adaptive immune system is made up of lymphocytes and antibodies. Which type of pathogens is humoral immunity most suited to fight off? The humoral adaptive immune system, made up of B cells and antibodies, produces antibodies that indirectly and directly attack extracellular organisms. And finally, what are three of the main T lymphocyte groups that are part of adaptive immunity? The cellular adaptive immune system contains CD4-positive cells that modulate the immune system, CD8-positive cells that directly attack cells, and regulatory T cells that downregulate the immune response of CD4 and CD8 cells. And now that this one's in the bag, Let's revisit our patient from earlier on in this episode. Thinking back to your patient's mother's questions, how will you explain the difference between how antibody injections and vaccinations work, and whether her son can receive vaccinations in the future? You remarked that these are excellent questions. Vaccinations that produce long-lasting effects work by activating the T and B cells, which produce killer cells and antibodies, respectively. This is referred to as active immunity, because it activates the host's immune system. The advantage with this type of immunity is that, once the cells are activated, a subset becomes memory cells, and they can be activated anytime the offending pathogen is encountered. In contrast, antibody injections skip this activation step, and once the antibodies degrade, they cannot be replenished, hence why the antibodies must be administered every 3 to 4 weeks. This is passive immunity. You add that since her son's disease is characterized by a lack of mature B cell, any vaccination that works by activating B cells to produce antibodies, especially live attenuated vaccines, should be avoided, since these shots could produce active infection in a vulnerable patient. And that's a wrap! I hope you picked up my enthusiasm with this one. When you start scraping the surface, the immune system seems incredibly complex. And of course, I mean, it is. But after scraping for a while, you really get to appreciate how this exquisite design allows us to fight off a very wide range of pathogens while optimizing resource use, in a way that, on a day-to-day basis, you don't even notice it. And there is some beautiful simplicity in that. Anyways, make sure to like and subscribe to this podcast. Remember, your feedback continuously helps us to improve. You can also get the full RxBricks experience online at www.usmle-rx.com. I'll catch you on the next one.